Charlie Slows on the call. Nats baseball tonight with Dave Jagler. 6:15 pregame, 6:45 first pitch. Charlie, how about Andrew Alvarez's debut? Not much of a prospect, not a guy that has high expectations moving forward, but he pitched, add, subtracted, located. That's what it's supposed to look like yesterday.
Absolutely. A guy who did not start the year well, but had been coming on. And so he's the guy that deserved the chance to show himself in the big leagues with Mackenzie Gore on the injured list. And that was really nice to see. We heard he had a couple of different spins and looks on a breaking ball. So we saw that, and he had great command, threw strikes, and is exactly what they had hoped he would do. And he did it over five innings and left us all wanting more.
Speaking of Mackenzie Gore, what's the latest on him? How is he in his recovery?
Well, he's thrown now 3 days in a row. So, you know, they shut him down for a few days, and now he's been playing catch. I mean, that's a really good sign. You see a guy go on the injured list with inflammation, and you're thinking, well, guy's going to be shut down, so how can he make it back in 2 weeks' time? But, you know, we'll see when he gets on a mound and throws a bullpen. That's when you really know. But so far, so good.
It's been just a disastrous year. Not just at the major league level, but at the minor league level as well. Travis Sakura, Tommy John, we're still awaiting word on Harleen Susana's MRI, but the other top pitching prospect's been shut down with the same ailment that led to TJ for Sakura. I'm wondering, specific to Susana, like what you guys have been hearing and what the timeline would be on figuring out more on that injury.
Well, we haven't heard anything yet. We're waiting for the same information that you are at this point, so... You know, hold your breath. Unfortunately, there's just so many of these UCL injuries. And, you know, he had a UCL strain earlier in the year. Hopefully this isn't related to that. And that isn't something that will, you know, shut him down and put him on, you know, surgery for anything like that. So, yeah, it's been a lot of injuries. You know, you lost the core to the hip surgery, or he would have been in big league camp. And you hope you're going to have him back at some point. You know, and then the other injuries, you didn't foresee DJ Hers in spring training, waiting a long time for Cade Cavalli to get here and looking forward to seeing him pitch again tonight. You know, you look at Josiah Gray, probably not at this point, just throwing bullpens to where he's started to face live hitters. I don't know if there's enough time for him to make it back to make a big league appearance before the year's over. That remains to be seen. And, you know, Trevor Williams, he had the internal brace procedure. He signed through next year. He thinks he's going to be ready for a regular spring training because he didn't have the full-blown Tommy John surgery. So we'll see. You know, that's going to be something you're going to have to address, and other pitchers who they may bring in the offseason. But certainly, you know, the depth that they thought they had in spring training this year, you know, disappeared very quickly.
Charlie, long-term big picture, I don't have many concerns. James Wood is wonderful, and, he's somebody to build around. But sort of looking at it, leads the major leagues in strikeouts. Second half of the season, two homers, hitting .208, getting on base at a .291 clip, and only slugging .325 for an OPS of .615, dramatically below all of his numbers from the first half of the season. Doesn't look real comfortable at the plate, as we just talked about, striking out a ton. Just, it doesn't look quite the same. I know it's hard when you're number one on the scouting report, but how do they get him going, and what are you seeing?
Well, you know, it was, like you said, a complete opposite. In the first half, he didn't chase pitches out of the strike zone. Normally, there were fastballs there. Those were the ones that he would hit. He's taken a lot of fastballs for strikes, particularly bottom of the zone, and he's chased pitches out of the strike zone. It's like he lost that terrific eye that he had that we saw when he came up last year and through the first half when he was a dominating offensive force. And, you know, you hope that it was just a slump that would last a month, but, you know, it's carried on to this point through the second half, and it's, you know, something that, you know, he's going to have to figure out. Maybe he's had his sophomore jinx in the second half of this year, which would have been like the beginning of his second year, figuring last year he played a half a season. Maybe that came in the second half of the season, and he'll figure it out. But certainly, you know, you didn't see him at the midway point of the year, you know, at this pace. I mean, you're talking about threatening the major league strikeout record.
Charlie, three really good outings in a row for Cade Cavalli to start his season. And then last time out at Yankee Stadium, he was knocked out of the game in the third inning, 8 hits and 7 earned runs. It was really rough. What went wrong in that game, and how does he get back going well this evening as he's on the mound against the Marlins?
Well, he wasn't alone. Everyone got knocked around in that series by the Yankees, who suddenly became red hot you know, again, like everybody else who struggled and got hit, if you live in the middle of the plate, big league hitters are going to, really good big league hitters with power are going to take advantage of that. And that's, you know, what we have seen over the course of the season. You watch a guy like Andrew Alvarez yesterday, and the Marlins, you know, they don't score a lot of runs, but they hit for average. They get a lot of hits, but he stayed out of the middle of the plate. They didn't make good contact against him. And, you know, as a pitching staff, the rotation when they struggle is when they're right in the middle of the plate, and that's anybody. Gore, Irvin has given up major league leading home run total. Parker, it's all the same thing. It's the middle of the plate. Middle of the plate with your fastball, middle of the plate with your breaking ball, middle of the plate with a changeup up. You're going to get hit.
Charlie, flip side, this bullpen all of a sudden isn't just, you know, getting better for here. They're good for anybody. I think they'll have the fewest base runners in Major League Baseball among bullpens over the last handful of games played, where they've been electric here. I think it was 9 scoreless innings over 2 nights against 2 different opponents. These guys are settling into roles. You're seeing some pitchers pitch pretty damn well out of this pen.
Yeah, considering, you know, you've rebuilt the bullpen a lot over the course of the season, the changes that you're made, and, you know, trying to find people can consistently get outs. And yesterday was a chance, really, the first time in a while, to protect a lead. They haven't had a chance to do that. Jose Ferrer has not had regular work in that closer's role. He was in there yesterday. You saw Cole Henry in the 8th, and, you know, Beater, they picked up for the Yankees, the Rosario trade. His MO in the past have been a lot of walks, a lot of strikeouts. When he's on, he's going to strike out a lot of people. And he did that. And, you know, some of the other guys, Pilkington and Poulin, who was ironically the guy that the Tigers had a DFA because they needed a 40-man roster spot for Kyle Finnegan, and the Nationals claimed it on waivers, has done a really nice job as a left-hander out of the bullpen. So certainly put him in the position to someone you consider to be in this spot next year.
Charlie, thank you. Good catching up.
Incredibly, unbelievably, 30 years ago, Cal Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's record for most consecutive games played, and we are honored to have Cal join us right now on the Rude Guest Hotline. Cal, what's up, man? Thank you for making time for us.
You're quite welcome. Can you believe it's 30 years ago?
Oh, long time, man.
Can you?
No. I mean, it's kind of weird. When I think about it, sometimes it feels like it's yesterday. The memory is really crystal clear. I saw it from my perspective, and it just seems like it happened moments ago. And then other times I sit here and think, man, that was another lifetime ago. I was a baseball player. I played 20 years, and that happened to me during my career. So it goes either way, but it's certainly you know, how great it was and what a good feeling it was. That's front in mind, you know, sharing it with my mom, my dad, my kids. Mm. It was a spectacular night.
I got to go to 21-29, and that was a really big deal for me as a kid. I grew up a huge O's fan, and I remember the numbers up on the warehouse wall. They would come down, you know, in between the innings there every game. It was all just so special. What, if anything, do you remember most from that game? Like the lap you did, all of it was just such a wild night.
Yeah, you bring the numbers on the warehouse. The first time they did that, I think it was like 2 weeks before. It was kind of build up. I wish I'd remember the number. It caught me by surprise. You know, they played the John Tesh music, and the game becomes official at 4.5 if you're winning, 5 if you're losing. And then, so it's right in the middle of the game, and I was thinking, what is that? What's going on? What are we doing? And then I see the number drop, and then I kind of get it. And, you know, then it kind of it brings you along in anticipation that it's going to happen like in 21-31. So every time that song played when we were home and they changed the number on the warehouse, it made me start to reflect on who was important in my life. You know, you kind of go backwards. And it was kind of emotional. Mm-hmm. I don't know who came up with that thought or idea, but it really prepared the fans, the audience, and all of us, you know, for that moment on 21-31 when it did drop and it became official. What it didn't prepare us for was how long that celebration was going to last in the middle of the game, and it ended with or it ended when Rafael Palmeiro and Bobby Bo pushed me down the line to take a lap around that park. I remember thinking, man, we got to get this game going. You know, we can't, you know, it's like a rain delay. You know, the pitchers are going to get cold and, you know, we're going to lose it. And when I started that lap around, probably about three or four handshakes in, I was thinking, I could care less if this game ever starts again. It was that good.
I remember watching it on TV, and it was just, especially the lap, was just so epic. And it just seemed like the whole world was focused on Camden Yards in that moment and celebrating you and your career and the longevity. If you want to relive it, this Saturday, September 6th, the Dodgers with Shohei in town. There's going to be a pregame ceremony before the Orioles take on the Dodgers. The ceremony is at 6:25 p.m. Gates open at 5. You can get tickets at Orioles.com. And so you're not going to jog around the field this time. You're rolling around in a convertible. Is that right?
I rolled around in a convertible before. The story there is it was a red Corvette. A lot of people think that was a gift to me, but it wasn't. I ended up getting a Chevy Tahoe as a gift. And I was wondering, how come I didn't push harder for that Corvette? the Corvette that took me around, I think it was in my last game. But anyway, it's the same Corvette, the same owner of the Corvette there. So that's a little nostalgic in a way. But I'll go around the park, and I have I have the responsibility of making a few remarks. And I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to say yet, but I'm working on it.
But do you ever sit down and just think about that whole feat, Cal? Like, you know, I really accomplished this? Because I know when people start playing the game, you're not thinking about how many games you're going to play. And then you go and you play that many consecutive games.
No, I mean, if you were to ask me when I was younger, you know, when I first broke into the big leagues, I think I would have rather had more home runs than Hank Aaron. I'd rather have more hits than Pete Rose. You know, those were kind of goals that you were trying to figure out. Were you good enough to kind of, you know, amass any sort of numbers in the game? I would never said that I was, going to play, have a consecutive game streak, or I was going to break Lou Gehrig's record. That just kind of happened because I played. I wanted to get better. The managers kept writing my name in the lineup. And before you knew it, it was almost 1,000 games that showed up. And then I think that's when the streak became born, when because the National League record was a little over 1,000 games, and it started to get some sort of attention. And I would say that there was quite a bit of negative attention from about 1,200 to about 1,500. You know, every time we went into a rebuilding mode, or every time I went into a slump, which, you know, happened quite a bit, they would say that I needed to take a day off, and that, you know, that I was being selfish or something. And right after 1,500, it seemed like all my critics turned into the biggest advocates. They were saying that I had to break the record for the sake of the game of baseball and all kinds of stuff. But to me, it was all the same. I showed up every single day to play, and I was resilient. I found out early on in my career that I could play less than 100%, because sometimes I think some players – you know, don't know if they can, compete at that level, not being 100%. But I found that I could. And so then it was just a matter of coming out and being ready to play each and every day. And the streak just took care of itself.
Don't you think that's something that most players in every sport need to realize, that you don't have to be 100% to go play?
Well, I mean, there is something called experience that as you age, yep. You know, as your talent kind of goes down, your experience takes over. It's not shortcuts, but you understand how things work a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And I think I had a couple of injuries really early in my career. I remember one where I hyperextended my elbow, avoiding a tag at second base on a double. So then I caught the bag and my elbow hyperextended in. And I remember thinking, man, you know, that hurts, but it's okay in the field. But when I picked up a bat and started to swing it, it hurt quite a bit. And so I took it up to the plate, swung at a bad pitch in the dirt on the first pitch, and winced in pain. And then I calmed myself down and got a better pitch to hit, you know, a fastball that was over the plate. I waited a little too long on it, put a short swing on it, and hit a bullet at the second baseman. And as I was running to first base, I realized when you swing and miss, it hurts like hell. when you make contact, it doesn't hurt at all.
That's
and
awesome.
I tell you what, I got hotter. You know, home runs, doubles, home runs, driving in runs, hit for a high average. And I kept thinking, you know, every time you have a little bit of an injury, there's a silver lining in there somewhere. And I went looking for it.
That's awesome. Right. Talking with Cal Ripken here on the Rude Guest Hotline, the Iron Man of baseball. This Saturday marks the 30th anniversary of Cal getting to 21-31, breaking Lou Gehrig's record. It sounds like it's going to be an awesome day of baseball at Camden Yards. Harold Baines is going to be there, Eddie Murray, Mike Mussina, Jim Palmer, Rafi Palmeiro, BJ Surhoff, Brady Anderson. John Miller is going to be back. I mean, John Miller was the voice of so many summer evenings of my life as a kid. I'm curious, Cal, like, obviously you've done these, right? Like, you were there the night it happened, and then there's a 10-year anniversary, a 20-year anniversary. Going into this 30th year, knowing all these guys that are making the time and the commitment to come see you, will it get emotional for you, or is it just fun at this point?
Well, I mean, it feels a lot more like fun right now. Sure, when I think about my dad, you know, and even some of the comments that I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to say, I'm sure I'll mention my dad and my mom, and it'll hit me at that moment, if I could just hit me now. But so yeah, you'll have flashes of emotion, but I think, you know, the anniversaries are anniversaries, and you know, I'd never want to make a big deal out of anniversaries or even reunions when you were in high school and all that. But I think this time around, I just turned 65, and you have a little bit different perspective on life at the time. Mm-hmm. And then you enjoy looking back and kind of remembering, you know, some of the highlights of your life and your career and the people that you spent doing it. And I think, as you mentioned, those names, you know, a lot of people, you know, were a part of that, and they were there right along with it. We all experienced it together. You know, I've had some conversations. I think the Orioles have a couple surprises, so they say. You know, I said that I think that I heard that Bo and Rafi were rumored to come back and maybe recreate the lap around the ballpark
awesome.
Without me running a lap.
That's
but,
awesome.
just remembering that and sharing those experiences are pretty cool. So, yeah, maybe I'm softening in my older age. Where you look back and you're thankful for the for those memories, and this is a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, Saturday is going to be a special day at Camden Yards. Pregame ceremony at 6:25. First pitch at 7:05. Dodgers are in town. It's already a juicy game. Rafi's on the press release, so Palmeiro at least will be there. I can't speak
all
for
right.
Bobby Bonilla. And this is crazy. Somebody just pointed this out to me. Saturday's the 30th anniversary of 21-31. Do you know what it's the 29th anniversary of?
Of course I do. Eddie Murray hit his 500th home run September 6, 1996.
Yeah. Wow. How crazy. And, I mean, two huge days in Orioles history on the same day.
It's awesome. And so Eddie and I, in the past so many September 6th, you know, I'll text him and say happy anniversary, and he'll text me back. So we share that date, you know. At first he said that, of course I have to do it on September 6th, you know, and have it be overshadowed by your game. And I go, no, it's not overshadowed. We all enjoyed that home run just as much as you did hitting it.
That's so cool. Cal, congratulations. Last thing for me. You played for all the logos. Do you prefer like the cartoon bird or like the actual drawing of the bird?
When I first came up, it was the all cartoon bird. And I remember, you know, Brooksy, when I was, you know, watching him growing up, I always liked the old time bird. And, but I think it's really cool that you can switch and go back and forth. You know, Brady Anderson and I talk about this sometimes. You know, most people are jealous that the game has gone big and the salaries keep continue to rise. And everybody says, God, I wish I played in this era. But Brady and I talk about, well, God, the uniforms are so much better. And some of the things that you had to wear every single day, or the bats, you know, look at how well made the bats are, how many different kinds of bats, or the science of the bat. and just all the things that go with the game, we're thinking, man, we love to play with all that. And we don't really think about the salary part of the game. But it's fun to, it's fun to think about those kind of things. I didn't play when there was wool uniforms where they weigh about 10 pounds by the time you finish the Sunday afternoon game. But, you know, our uniforms weren't as comfortable and weren't nearly as nice as they are now.
That's awesome. Cal, thank you for the time.
Appreciate
everybody,
you,
go up to Camden Yards Saturday night. Should be a really, really special night. All sorts of different experiences and special memorabilia will be really cool. Congratulations, man. Thanks for making time.
Thanks. The 21-29 game, I forgot to tell you this or whatever else. You witnessed that one.
Yeah.
I hit three home runs, one in 21-29, one in 21-30, one in 21-31. And Mike Messina gave me the batting tip in 21-29. It was against Jim Abbott. He said, you're getting out in front. Why don't you put a little flex in your stance a little bit, bend your knees, and see what happens. And I hit a home run to right center field, and that kind of catapulted me into 21-30 and 21-31. So that was Mike Messina gave me the batting tip.
That's so cool. What a cool
good stuff,
story.
Man. Great story.
Cal, thank you for the time, sincerely.
Well, you're quite welcome.
Appreciate you, brother.
See you there Saturday.
All right. The legendary Cal Ripken Jr. joining us Saturday at Camden Yards will be a very, very special game. If I don't have eight kids' soccer games, maybe I'll try to sneak up to the yard for that one. What a day that'll
be. You should be let off for that one, though.
That is really, really cool. That's
a good thing. That's a good excuse.
Yeah, that's a highlight for me, man. Cal Ripken is an absolute hero.
Sunday afternoon on Fox, we talked to Kevin Burkhardt earlier today. One of his broadcast partners over at Fox is on the Rood Guest Hotline. Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, and it is our buddy Mike Pereira, who is there. One of the experts for officiating covering the National Football League and a former longtime NFL official. Mike, thank you for hopping aboard. How are you?
I am great. I'm so happy that preseason is over and that we're headed into the regular season. I think it's going to be a great season.
Well, we're excited too. We got to get it in the rear view. Everybody needs that preseason, I suppose, right? But
yeah, even the officials, by the way.
Indeed.
I always felt like they were probably the ones that needed it the most, as a matter of fact, because they have no real, off-season training, you know, other than classroom-type stuff and going to the camps. And those three games are very valuable to them.
We'll get to the dynamic kickoff. Danny and I just talked a bunch about some of the changes a few minutes ago, but we could circle back to that with you in a moment. But otherwise, the only thing I've heard a lot about in terms of officiating changes going into the season is another huge emphasis being put on some taunting stuff. And in fact, I even saw one call that I hated in the preseason where this guy basically got up and was jumping around and got flagged. So I guess two-parter here for you, Mike. Is it true that they're trying to crack down on that again? And then the second part is why? Like, where does this come from with these grown adults out on the field that we've decided that any kind of, not even trash talk, but like jumping around is a bridge too far?
Really, there is an emphasis, but to me, and what I've seen, other than some overreaction by the officials, I mean, everything's going to be about the same. I mean, you always try to make a little bit of an impression in the preseason by calling a few things just to get everybody's attention. But you know, you don't want that kind of call made during regular season games unless it's really directed at an opponent. I mean, directly at the opponent. And, you know, back in my days when I was the head of officiating, there was a reason why they called me the president of the No Fun League, because I didn't like celebrations. I didn't like going to the ground. I didn't like using props. And once they got me out of there, then they relaxed the standards. And I think it's probably better. But the emphasis this year more is on the weapon shooting, you know, anything of simulating shooting a gun, brandishing a weapon. Those types of things are the ones that they're going to crack down on. That's what we've all been told. So, you know, the notion of puts the officials a little bit in a bind. Is he signaling that he made a first down, or is he doing it in such a way that he looks like he's shooting a gun? You know, I think that's going to maybe kind of cause a little bit of consternation early. But, you know, in my mind, nothing's much going to change except you can't simulate shooting, no six shooters. no firing a rifle, no brandishing a weapon, like lifting your shirt to pretend like you have one in your, you know, in your pants. You know, but in the end, I think it's one of these, a lot of talk, not a lot of difference when the season starts.
Mike, how will this Hawkeye situation work logistically? Just both they just let people know kind of what's going on, the change there, and B, how does it work for the officials there on the ground?
Yeah, and I think that's, I don't want people to get the wrong idea of this Hawkeye system. The only thing that the Hawkeye system does is replace the chains. That's all it does, okay? It does not help in spotting the ball whatsoever. So it's only when the officials put the ball on the ground, when they determine what their spot is, they put the ball on the ground, then Hawkeye measures to see if it's a first down or not. It will not adjust the spot, and I think that's where some people might be a little bit confused. And I hope, and I think it will, work a little bit better in the regular season than it did in some of the preseason games, where the delay was unbelievable to time it out, to get it to work, to put it on the scoreboard, on the television screen. You know, we've been through this in the United Football League, and it caused some problems there too in terms of delay. But the notion is to try to speed up the process instead of having one of my favorite groups, you know, kind of waddle out on the field with the chains and hand the rod to the umpire, and then have the chains extended and the drama that goes along with that. And then, you know, once the decision is made, they get the head off the field. I mean, those jobs are priceless to those people that have them. They've been passed from generation to generation. But as with technology, the more ways we can use it to speed up things and maybe be just a little bit more accurate, I guess, because it's basically lasers as opposed to links on chains. It's just something that's going to be interesting to watch throughout the season.
Mike Pereira, Fox officiating analyst. So, Mike, along these lines, this has kind of always been one of my frustrations, is maybe too strong, but you know, one of the things I've found fascinating about officiating in the NFL is spots, right? And most of the time when I go back and watch, they're really, really
good. They're good at it.
Like, considering how fast the game's moving and the body's all over the place, guy goes down and they spot the ball perfectly. You know, I guess there's no way to have somebody in their ear to tell them exactly where to put the ball or whatever, like a wrestling match where they're telling you, all right, we're going to this move. Tell them, you know, telling the official literally, all right, we're going to this spot next. But I do wonder, you know, the one where it just seems like a complete guess is the punt out of bounds in the air. They're just walking up the sideline for eight minutes, and it's like, you're 15 yards off. You have no idea. But, like, what's your philosophy or thought on how close spotting is? Because there are games sometimes where I'm watching, and I'm like, that's off by a yard easy. And if you add those up, that's 6-7 yards this half that they've lost.
Yeah, and it is not a precise science. We know that. Actually, the kick out of bounds, the airborne kick out of bounds, I actually think that one is pretty accurate, because there is a method to that. The umpire, I mean, the referee, knowing that it's going out of bounds, just stays stationary, watch the flight of the ball, and then he waits for the deep official to come up down the sideline to hit that intersection point of the flight, and where he's walking, he marks it. It's pretty good. Believe it or not. But the thing that people don't understand is the toughest spots are not necessarily in the middle of the field, although you lose sight often in the middle of the field. But if you're the official, it's the run that comes into your side zone. And I say that because if a run comes toward you in your side zone, you back off. Okay, you back off of the line of scrimmage and let the runner go by and stay in front of you. So you don't have a precise spot. You're not looking down the line when that first body part, other than the hand or foot, touches the ground. And the interesting thing is, if that run happens like that, where the line of scrimmage official has to give way, let the runner go by, it's the official, the line of scrimmage official on the other side of the field, we call it cross field mechanics, who has the full field of vision in front of him, who can be on the line of scrimmage to see. He then actually spots it, and the official on the side where the ball went mirrors him. It's pretty complicated, and yep, it's pretty frustrating too, because you look at it and say, my gosh, he missed that by a yard. You know, replay is involved in that. Video assist is involved in that. I mean, I think, you know, we just see so many things so great in slow motion that it seems like it should be easier than it is. But I do think technology and the fact that they have made that reviewable has made it better. But I remember back in my days, man, you know, you so often didn't get the look that you really needed to get, and you do the best you can. And I think we've moved forever and ever now to try to bring perfection to officiating, which is never going to happen. But that doesn't mean you still strive to make things better. And I think that technology has helped in that area.
Mike Pereira with us here on G&D. All right, walk folks through the kickoff. How's it going to be different? How might it play out this year? What are folks going to see?
Well, I'm kind of one of the guys that didn't like it going in last year. It just kind of didn't make sense to me that, you know, we would have a live ball where actually what 20 players couldn't move until the ball hit the ground, you know, or was touched. And but I grew to be okay with it. And I guess for a couple of reasons. Number one, the kickoff remained in the game. It was headed to extinction, you know, when the rate of return one every five was being returned, you're taking obviously a big play out of the game. And so the fact that there were more was good. More returns was good. And then when you look at the concussions and however they figure them out, the fact is that the number was down. When you compare the number of concussions in a regular scrimmage play, if you take a look at that ratio per play, the number of concussions per kickoff came down to about the same as the number of concussions per scrimmage play. So that's good. So what held it back was the fact that, you know, teams, if they didn't feel they had a good kickoff defend team, you know, a kickoff into the end zone, you know, last year was, you know, put it on the 30-yard line as opposed to the 25 the year before. So the 5 yards wasn't worth the risk. And so how do you get more in? Well, you know, you take that touchback and put it to the 35-yard line. And now you're talking about a significant difference. You know, you're talking about that drive start at the 35. That's going to force teams who wanted to kick it in the end zone all the time, it's going to force them to defend. So I think it's probably safe when the league says that they're hopeful that the return rate is going to go to like 60% returns. I mean, in the spring league, the United Football League, we were shooting for 90% returns. And we were, that's really just about where we've been at. Of course, we kicked off from the 20, but, and that obviously makes quite a bit of a difference, but I like where it's going. It's back in the game. It's going to be more back in the game this year. And, you know, as long as it's deemed to be as safe as any other play in football, then I'm now a convert.
You'll be watching Mike Pereira again all fall long, educating everybody on the rules of the league and giving opinions on what he's seeing from an officiating standpoint. He is the former VP of officiating in the NFL and the rules analyst over at Fox Sports. So, Mike, last one for me. If you could change any rule, you get appointed rules czar and the commissioner is on the line with you. What would you change if you got to make one sweeping adjustment?
Well, let me be clear. The commissioner is not going to call me, you know, but if for some reason he did, I'd go with my same old one. Look, I was a deep official when I was on the field in the league. The most difficult call that you have to make to me without question is pass interference. Everybody's moving. The defender's moving. The receiver's moving. The ball is in the air. You're moving. And then there's the added pressure that if that's 40 yards downfield, you're talking about a 40, 50-yard penalty. And you know what? You're not always right because it's so difficult. So staring the 40-yard or 50-yard mistake, you know, in the eyes is pretty tough. And I've always been a proponent of the college rule that says that it's a maximum 15-yard penalty. I think it's, you know, the fact that offensive pass interference is a maximum 10-yard penalty in the NFL. And it just seemed to me not to be equitable, especially when I saw so many when I ran the program, and you'd feel terrible because guy would make a call, defensive pass interference, 40 yards down the field, and you would have to evaluate that call. You look at it and say it was incorrect. You just awarded 40 free yards. And so I would go to the competition committee practically every year and say, let's go to the college rule. And the response would be, no, we're not going to do that because we'll take away the deep vertical passing game. And I go, no, if you watch Saturday football, if you're close enough to try to make a play, you and if you're close enough to commit pass interference, you're trying to make a play. They don't tackle people. And I even said, okay, if they do, like on a double move, just reach and tackle somebody, then we'll make that a spot foul if it's over 15 yards. But I couldn't budge the group who were so concerned about the deep vertical passing game I couldn't make any progress. Now in the spring leagues, we do have that, and it's interesting. We thought, well, what kind of feedback will we get? Will people be unhappy with that? In reality, nobody even noticed. I mean, it just became a 15-yard penalty, just like if you slugged a guy 15 yards. Well, now if you pull the jersey and restrict the ball in the air 15 yards, okay, that seems equitable to me.
Mike, awesome to catch up with you, man. Appreciate it. Enjoy the start of the season.
You got it. Take care.
Great info from Mike Pereira of Fox Sports with us on Grant and Danny.
B. Mitch and Finley fired up. Get to the Rude Guest Hotline. Welcome in Boomer Esiason. Hear him on WFAN. Follow Boomer at 7, Boomer Esiason. Boomer, what's up, man? Thanks for making time for us. Boomer, you there?
I am here, yes. I had to unmute my microphone. Sorry about that, guys. JP, great to talk to you. Brian, great to talk to you. And hopefully you guys are ready for a great season down there in Washington.
Oh, yeah. We hope we can get a repeat of last year, Boomer.
But
you know how tough that is, huh?
Yeah, but, think about everything that Washington went through, right? They got the new owners, they got the new coach, and then, of course, they got the most important ingredient, and that is the quarterback that is super special, seems really dedicated, and I would expect that there's not going to be any letdown in Jaden Daniels this year, much like C.J. Stroud went through last year. I would think that the way that this kid goes about his business, that we should expect exactly what we saw last year, if not even better.
I tend to agree with you, Boomer. What do you make of Jaden's game? And after watching last year how good he was, what areas do you think he can even grow this year?
Whatever his mom tells him to do. You know what I mean? That's going to be the most important thing. Seems like she's the most important person in his life. But, the things last year that, he probably will not do as much this year is he probably won't rely as much on the athleticism. He'll see the defenses, he'll read the defenses, he'll feel more comfortable in the pocket. I'm sure that his communication, as Brian knows, is going to be a lot better and a lot stronger, a lot more demanding. I mean, it's his team. And, he may not have realized that immediately simply because he was a rookie and wanted to be somewhat respectful to everybody, because he really seems like a respectful young man, which is great. But now it's his team. So he can be more demanding, and he can be even more leader-like than he was last year. And it's not always about the way you speak. It's more about the way you play, the way you go about things when things don't go well, how you pick up your teammates. And, this is what every NFL team wants. They want the next Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow. And Washington's fortunate enough to be able to have one of those guys who really, I mean, honestly, I don't really see him in a lot of commercials. Don't see him doing a lot of off-the-field stuff. I see him really hopefully honing his craft, which is a man who is committed to becoming great. And he sees the numbers out there. He knows the amount of money that's out there for him to get it when it comes his time. So I would think that he is going to be focused on being great, and that's all you could ask for.
Boomer, you named those four quarterbacks, and we know that that's the upper echelon. And those guys are good every year. So I hear people say, well, you know what, now the defensive coordinators have film on that quarterback. When you get guys like that, they have film on those defensive coordinators too. And just as much as the defensive coordinator can figure out something to mess with them, they can figure out something to circumvent that. How do you keep that going? You play quarterback. Can you understand that next year they come with different wrinkles and you got to bring a different wrinkle?
Well, I know one thing. The Giants try to get faster on defense. They tried to bolster their secondary and their pass rush. And the reason that they did that is because when you look at the quarterbacks in their division, Jalen Hurts, Dak Prescott, and Jaden Daniels, those guys have been running roughshod over the Giant defense for the last 10 years. So the Giants have gone out of their way to try to get faster on defense, try to get their pass rush to be more explosive, and try to get their secondary a lot better in coverage. And if they do have the pressure that we all expect that they will generate with Abdul Carter and Kayvon Thibodeau and Brian Burns and Dexter Lawrence, then the back seven should definitely benefit from that. So that's, for me, I mean, that's from the Giants' perspective. They know they're playing three athletic quarterbacks, three tremendous quarterbacks, so they had to do everything they possibly could to improve their defense first and foremost. And then secondly, for the Giants, what they have to do is they have to stay away from the turnovers. They barely got any turnovers last year, and they were turning the ball over consistently every week, which was just basically putting them in a hole from the beginning. So they're going to be a much more competitive team, I believe, this year, and one of the reasons for that is trying to match the speed that, you know, that Washington has, especially with Jaden Daniels and the secondary playmaking abilities that he has.
Boomer, what do you think they'll get for the Giants out of Russ Wilson this year?
Well, I think what they're hoping for is just stability. I mean, you know, Daniel Jones, he was here, what, for 6 years, I think, and it was flatline. He never really took a leadership role. As I was just talking about Jaden Daniels growing into being a leader, you know, Daniel never really had that gene in him. That he wasn't a boisterous guy. He wasn't a guy that, you know, it's not that they didn't respect him. They loved him. But he just wasn't a guy that was making plays at the right time. And I think what they want from Russell Wilson is they want the deep ball, because he does throw a very good deep ball, and they do have Malik Nabers, who's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, especially going deep. So they want that, but they also want somebody who's not going to turn the ball over and kind of settle things down and keep the game close in the fourth quarter and then go and win it in the fourth quarter. And I, you know, the Giants lost a bunch of one-score games last year, and it was just mind-numbing how they would lose in the fourth quarter, or the other team would pull away because the quarterback would either fumble the ball or throw it away or make a bad play, and due in large part to injuries. But I think they want stability from Russell. I don't think it's going to be 350 yards a game. I think it's going to be a 210 to 230 yards a game, maybe two touchdowns, an interception, and maybe they score 24 points and they try to win 24 to 21. That's what I think is the roadmap for the Giants this year.
That's it adds up, because there is talent there. We're talking with our friend Boomer Esiason. You can give him a follow at 7BoomerEsiason. Listen to him on WFAN. Watch him on CBS Sports Network. Boomer, I want to ask you about the game tonight, because we're all fired up just to have NFL football back on our televisions. A big NFC East battle, Eagles-Cowboys. But before we do that, just I want to check in on all the great work you do with your foundation. I know how busy you are just with the media stuff, but you always make time for the Boomer Esiason Foundation, just trying to help where you can.
Well, I thanks for asking. You know, my son Gunnar is 34 years old now, and when he was diagnosed with CF back in 1993, he wasn't expecting to make it to 19. So the fact that he's 34, he's living life, he has two children that he's the biological father for, is nothing short of a miracle. And that miracle basically came in 2018, when finally the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, in conjunction with our foundation and others around the country, was able to raise enough money to find that drug that was going to unlock the life of a CF kid. And 90% of the kids are benefiting from this drug, and Gunnar is proof positive that their miracles can happen. So I always say that Gunnar's my hero. My grandson, the first-born grandson, Casper, is our miracle, because if we didn't do, and people around us weren't doing what they were doing to raise money for CF, it would never happen. So we are flying high. Gunnar is flying high, and we're still doing all the things that we've done over the last 30 years, and we'll continue to do that.
Love that, man.
You know, a lot of players do a lot of work and do a lot of charity work, but when it's your kid that's benefiting off of it, first of all, you have to be very, very proud of that as well, man.
Yeah, you know, Brian, he, you know, and the NFL gave me an unbelievable platform. So I was still a player in 93, retired in 97, and then went into the media. The media gave me the amazing platform as well to tell the story. ESPN did an E60 on Gunnar on Christmas Eve this last year, and that was Casper's third birthday. And, you know, the E60 captured who Gunnar is, the patient, and then the kind of man that he has grown up into. So I always say I never won a Super Bowl, had a chance to win one. Unfortunately, Joe Montana beat us at the end. But in the Super Bowl of life, the fact that my son is a father himself, 34 years old, there's no greater feeling than the feeling that I had when he got married and he told me that his wife was pregnant. That was a feeling that I don't think I'll ever forget, and I would imagine that's what it feels like winning five Super Bowls. So that's that's my Super Bowl, and I'm certainly very proud of it.
It's funny, we had Solomon Wilcots on maybe last week or 2 weeks ago and asked him about that Super Bowl, and it was still very fresh in his mind. I would say.
It's fresh in all of our minds, unfortunately.
Yeah. What about tonight? You've got the Super Bowl champs, the Eagles hosting the Cowboys. Dallas just traded away Micah Parsons. Jerry Jones is doing Jerry Jones things. The Eagles look loaded. On the surface, this doesn't look like it's going to be much of a game, but we know life in the NFL is rarely
in NFC East.
Right, it's rarely what it seems.
That's right, and I'm sure Brian agrees with me when I say I'm happy for Micah Parsons because very few players truly get what they want. He ultimately wanted a trade, and he wanted a big contract, and he was able to do that and secure a huge amount of dollars, and this is something we fought for all the way back since 1987 when we went on strike, and in 82 as well. But and we're starting to see players be able to use and leverage the system so they can get what they want out of it, thankfully, and I appreciate that. So I'm happy for Micah. I think it's probably better for the Cowboys because I do think he was somewhat of a distraction with the podcasting and all that other stuff. I'm not saying he was unpopular in the locker room, but there was some separation between he and other players. There's no question about that because as popular as he has become, and he had some great takes on things. You know, he's going to be great in TV if he wants to do it one day. But I would say that maybe they're better off without him. And the reason I say that is because there could be more harmony there. And one of the reasons why they lost all the games they lost last year is because Dak Prescott missed nine of those games, and two of those games fell against the Eagles. So the Eagles ran roughshod over the Dallas Cowboys. They couldn't stop Saquon Barkley. And I wouldn't be surprised if this game is a lot closer than the 8.5 points that Philadelphia is laying here tonight. So I like the Cowboys to cover. I can see Philadelphia winning like a 27-24 game or a 24-21 game. But 8.5 points, man, that seems like an awful lot. Division game, opening game, and the Dallas Cowboys dealing with what they were dealing with. And Dak Prescott now feeling the pressure to have to really perform at a very high level to keep up with the Eagles' offense.
For sure. Boomer, I'm going to sneak one more in. Obviously, your greatest professional success was with the Bengals, but you also played with the Jets. You're a New York guy. What do you think of the team the Jets have put together with Justin Fields at quarterback?
You know, it's not great. I wasn't a big fan of the Justin Fields signing. They gave him $40 million for 2 years. I know that they needed a quarterback, and they wanted to move away from Aaron Rodgers. When Aaron Rodgers went on Pat McAfee and said he had never been released by a teenager before, and he said it half-jokingly, he was referring to Brick Johnson. That was Woody Johnson, the owner's son. So I knew that, you know, eventually Woody was going to say, you're out of here. And that's basically what happened. So I think most coaches would have loved to have kept Aaron Rodgers. He actually played reasonably well last year. And I think he'll play well for the Steelers as well this year. But they are rebuilding, resetting. Aaron Glenn, a former teammate of mine, who was under Bill Parcells when Bill Parcells took over for Rich Kotite, knows what needs to be done within the building to change the culture. So he's in the middle of doing all that right now. I just don't, you know, you have a rookie offensive coordinator in Tanner Engstrom. You got Justin Fields in his fourth offense in 4 years. You have a lot of moving parts, not one great wide receiver, not a lot of playmakers other than a running back. They have three pretty good running backs, and they just lost their best offensive lineman for the rest of the year to a triceps tear. So, and that's Elijah Vera Tucker. So I see them maybe 5 wins at best, maybe 6 if things went right. But I just don't see them being a very good football team this year. And maybe next year, Aaron's culture reset will take hold and they'll be a little bit more competitive.
Boomer, thank you for the time,
appreciate
man.
You,
go Terps. Malik looks like the real deal.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that, too, by the way. And well, we'll see when they get to the Big Ten. But they always start out strong, for sure. But Malik certainly looks like a great athlete. Maybe I'll go on record as saying maybe the greatest athlete Maryland's ever had as a quarterback. How's that?
I like that. Boomer, thank you very much for time, man.
Okay, guys, have a great day and enjoy the games.
All right,
thanks
care,
very
man.
Much. Boomer Esiason, check him out on WFAN, CBS Sports Network, and give him a follow at 7, Boomer Esiason, doing great work with his foundation. We're going to tell Coach Loxley what Boomer said about Malik in about an hour. Nobody go anywhere. It's B. Mitch and Finley.
But speaking of work, Adam Peters all offseason grinding his way to an improved roster. The general manager entering year two with the Commanders joins us now on Grant and Danny on the Fan. Adam, thank you so much for the time. How you been?
What's up, guys? Been great. Been great. This is awesome. Really exciting week. Feels like it took really a long time, but at the same time, it was really quick. So pumped up to get on the field this week.
Yeah, 3 days away from getting things started against the Giants. I was in Ashburn when you said before training camp you thought that the roster was better, there was more talent. And I don't think that can be argued. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But what do you think as you hand this team over now and entrust it to your staff, to Dan Quinn and company, about the group you and the front office were able to put together for 2025?
Yeah, like I said before, and you heard that, but I mean, first it's everybody. It's the front office, the coaches, everybody. The whole organization helps put this team together. It's really cool the way we all work together. And but we're really, really pumped for the guys that are in this locker room. I think we're deeper. I think we're, you know, on both sides of the ball, we're better up front. And secondary, I think really excited about the guys there. I think, you know, put our group of safeties against any group in the NFL, and the corners are really deep and experienced too. So really just great job by everybody, scouting department, coaches, everybody putting their heads together and finding the guys that will fit us the best.
After all the success last year, Adam, it was a blast for so many fans, and I imagine inside the walls of the org, too. It was really, really cool to go on that ride. But then when you sit down, those emotions go away, and it's, okay, let's get clinical. When you did your evaluation and you said, here's where I want to improve, and then kind of grade yourself and your team against that, what did you set out to say? We got to get better here, and how do you think you did?
Yeah, I think you know, we sat down and really wanted to get better in the trenches. And, you know, getting a guy like Laramie Tunsil, and that really strengthened us a lot because we can bump in Brandon Coleman, the guard, at left guard. And that left-hand side of the line is much better in terms of just, I mean, it's hard to get better than Laramie Tunsil. And he's been outstanding in his training camp, not only as a player, but as a leader and taking those guys under his wing, and then drafting Josh Connerly in the first round. And it was cool because, you know, he hadn't played any right tackle. So at the beginning, just getting his footwork and everything set, and then he just took off. And once we started playing preseason games, he really came alive. So up front, we feel really good on offense and defensively, getting in some bigger, stronger run defenders, Dietrich Wise, Javon Kinlaw, Eddie Goldman, adding those guys to the team we already had, and getting Vaughn to rush off the edge. I feel like we're deeper on both sides now.
Adam Peters on Grant and Danny. I don't know how many times a team year over year has had their tackles now starting at the guard spots potentially at some point this year, and then those backup guards, you know, end up becoming depth, right? And you're going to get Sam Cosmi back as well. So there's just no doubt the O-line so much better on paper going into the season. I wanted to circle back to the two guys you have experience with from San Francisco, though, and we'll stick with the size theme because a smart car-shaped human, one of the biggest dudes I've ever seen, Javon Kinlaw, what a preseason. I mean, he only was out there for a couple snaps, but he lifted up a guard like a forklift and threw him to the side in the Bengals game. Like, what are you excited to see with him? I know the narrative out there about what he's been numbers-wise is one thing, but you had him in another organization, and you were licking your lips to get back with him. What do you see in Kinlaw and what he can provide?
Yeah, I think with JK, first and foremost, and I think this is what we look at for anybody that we bring into this organization, is the person and the human being. And he's an outstanding person, an outstanding competitor, an outstanding teammate. And so to know that ahead of time, you know, a lot of times when you're in free agency, you're going off other people's opinions or what people tell you. And that's where, you know, teams that I've been on have made the biggest mistakes in terms of missing, not so much on talent, but on the human being. So knowing what a great person he is first and foremost, and being together with him for 4 years, you know, that made me feel really comfortable about bringing him in here into the locker room. And then as a player, you know, he hadn't had a ton of, you know, development in his first few years playing. He came in, it was the COVID year, and so we didn't have any training camp in San Francisco that year. So really learning the techniques and everything we were trying to do. So he missed the training camp, and then he had been dinged up a little bit the next couple of years. So hadn't had a ton of training camp, hadn't had a ton of off season until really his last year when he was fully healthy. And then he went to the Jets and had a really good year. And then, so we think, I guess long story short, you know, he's still ascending, even though, you know, he's been in the league for quite a while. He's still ascending and taking another step. And the way he's bought into our defense, the way he's bought into the way we play, and the way he's led in that meeting room has been awesome to see. So, you know, and he came out and he saw it on the tape, like you said, on that goal line play. And we're looking to see a lot more of that. So, yeah, really pleased with where he's at. And I think really he's got another level.
Adam, another player from San Francisco that's now here in Washington, Deebo Samuel. A lot of folks, fans, are really excited, myself included, about what he might bring to this offense. But last year, I'm sure if you'd ask him, wasn't up to his standards in terms of his usual production. In terms of your confidence bringing him in, is it one of those things where you feel like that was kind of a blip and there are reasons for that happen? Or, you know, is it start of a decline, regression? Just what did you see? And, you know, just walk us through what he's going to do for you guys.
Yeah, with Deebo, similar to J.K., knowing the type of person and the type of competitor he is, you know, he lights up a room, whatever room he's in. He loves football, loves everything about football. He loves coming into work. He loves being a great teammate. He loves hanging out with the guys. He'll come in and sit in your office and just chop it up. Just loves being around football and everything that comes with it. And then in terms of on the field, there's not too many guys that I've been around that have more competitive greatness on the field than Deebo in terms of the way he can will things to happen. And I saw that firsthand for a number of years. So I know the type of competitor he is. And, you know, he did have a down year last year, but he's extremely motivated. It feels like he's rejuvenated here. He's having a ton of fun. And he got a chance to really get a lot of work with Jaden. I was kind of the silver lining with not having Terry here in training camp is he got a lot of time with Jaden to really, you know, just get a lot of work one-on-one with him and then just put him in different spaces. And so Jaden can really develop a great chemistry with him. So really excited to see him and what he can do. I think he's going to have a really good year.
Deebo Samuel, one of two receivers in the entire league last year, who had 150 or more snaps, who was aligned in the backfield in the slot out wide and in tight at least 5% of the time. He and Jaden Reed from Green Bay, and just gives you so many options offensively. You know, Cliff Kingsbury is fired up about that addition. Speaking of offense, though, as we talk with Adam Peters, the GM of the Commanders, on Grant and Danny, let's talk Brian Robinson for a moment. You end up trading him to San Francisco. When did you come to the realization maybe that would have been best for the ball club to just move on? And also, is that more about B-Rob or more about Rodriguez and Krosky Merritt?
Yeah, I think, well, first and foremost, with B-Rob, we love B-Rob and the competitor that he was and just the person that he is. I think he came out and did a lot of great things for this organization. We thank him for that. But it really was just the confidence we had in that room and the depth in the room. Everybody's kind of a little bit different skill set in there, which we really like. And we're confident in all those guys in that room. And you go Eckler, you got McNichols, you got C-Rod, and you got Bill. And they all bring a little something different. But we're really confident in all those guys that come in and play at a high level for us. And so with B-Rob being in the last year of his contract, and there's a mechanism where if you really perform really well in the first few years of your contract on a rookie contract, that fourth year balloons up to a number that's much higher. And so that's an unfortunate part of this business where you have to make tough decisions like that. And we had a team in San Francisco that had a need, and they really liked B-Rob. And so I hope he has a great, you know, a year there for them, and I'm confident in the guys we have in that room for us.
Well, and you answered my question a little bit for me there, but I was going to ask, with Ja'Cory, do you already just call him Bill, or does he have to earn that yet? No carries yet. You don't get a one name. You're not just your first name like LeBron yet.
And Bill's the easiest for sure. It's a lot. It's a mouthful. Ja'Cory Crosby Myers is a mouthful.
I've been going JCM until he goes for 100. Then I'll go Bill.
That'll call him whatever he wants, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If he does that, call him whatever he wants. But yeah, Bill, that's what he's been going by. And it's a cool story. You have to ask him about it. But, you know, that's what everybody calls him, and that's what he answers to. So it makes it easy.
So looking at last year's against success, Adam, is it kind of, you know, portends what's going to happen this year. What was the thing that surprised you last year the most as you guys came together so quickly and had so much success and went on that wonderful run as part of the roster that you'd assembled? And I know you guys wanted to be competitive and you were, you know, upfront about that from Jump Street from the first minute you came on and started, you know, giving press conferences and talking about the team, and Dan Quinn kind of followed suit. But just in your heart of hearts and just kind of deep down, what surprised you the most about how last year went?
Yeah. Surprised that I think what I was impressed by the most is probably how quickly DQ got the team to bond together. And that was, you know, we brought in so many new people from so many different places, and not just talking about players, but coaches from front office staff, support staff, across the board. And to get everybody to gel together that quickly, to be able to kind of get on the same page that quickly and to really play for each other that quickly. Tip my cap to DQ and the way he was able to do that. He was extremely intentional about that, and the guys bought in. And I think that's what really carried us, because we weren't the most talented team or the second most talented team in the NFC last year. And for those guys, the way they worked together, the way they played for each other, I think, you know, not so much surprised, but just proud and impressed by how quickly that happened. And I got to give a lot of credit to DQ on that.
Trying to do some quick math in my head, but we had five shows a week every day of August, 4.5 hours a day. You'd be surprised to know that the majority of our show was spent talking about Terry McLaurin and the ongoing negotiation therein. A couple of things with that. Was that as stressful and exasperating for you as it seemed like maybe it would have been on the outside? Or was it calm and you knew all along that he'd be here against the Giants?
Yeah, I don't think we knew all along that that was going to happen. Obviously, there in a negotiation, you know, you have your ups and downs and times where you feel better about it and times where you're a little less optimistic. But, you know, it is stressful, but it's also, you know, it was really important to us. And so we knew we had to get it done one way or another. And to have Terry here for a long term, that's what we set out to do. And thanks to really Terry and his representation and our team here with Brandon Sosna and Rod Rogers, they really did a great job just keeping it above board and working together and trying to find something that worked for both sides. And Terry was outstanding throughout the process. We had a lot of meetings, a lot of conversations one-on-one right here where I'm sitting in my office in this chair. And I think those types of things help to get across the finish line. And, you know, we couldn't be more thrilled. And to Terry's credit, you know, coming out here first few weeks of practice since he's been back, I mean, he hasn't missed a beat, and he's looked outstanding and just shows the professional that he is, that no matter what, he came ready to play. So, you know, that's a big deal for our offense to have Terry in there. I mean, just watching all the different highlights from last year and all the incredible plays that he made for this team last year. And so we're so pumped to have him back.
With something like that, and I know you haven't been through a negotiation like that in the seat that you're sitting in, but do you negotiate deals differently by person, like Terry McLaurin uniqueness, or is it more a cookie cutter with age and position and projection? Like, how does that marriage work when you're trying to do what's best for him, but also, and more importantly, maybe what's best for the team?
Yeah, I think every deal is different, right? Some deals are more straightforward, you know, you kind of know exactly where that is. And, but other deals are more complicated. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that made this take a little bit longer than I think both sides would have liked, and just trying to figure out all the nuances of it and where it should end up. But yeah, every deal is different. You know, you're dealing with a different player, you're dealing with a different agent. And so everybody's style is a little bit different. And so sure, you'd like to get every deal done, you know, cut and dry really quickly. But, you know, as long as we get to where we want to get, you know, and we still had a few more weeks to get Terry back on the field and acclimated and everything like that. That's really the ultimate goal. And so we're just, you know, you don't want to have something where it goes sideways and trade somebody away or something like that. That's the last thing you ever want to do when you're not set out to do that. So, but yeah, every deal is different and, you know, you'd love to have them all wrapped up in a week, but that's just not the case.
Adam, as you guys enter this season, what is your biggest question or kind of variable where, hey, if this works, we'll end up being really, really good? What's one of those big things that's got you up at night?
Oh, man. that's an interesting question. I hadn't really thought about that. You know, I'm up at night every night. So
well, you're like me. You got a couple of daughters at home. So I got don't sleep very
I got a 7-month-old. That's my excuse.
Yeah. No, but I think I'm really confident in this team and this coaching staff and everybody in this building. So, you know, let the chips fall where they may, but I think the guys out there, you know, the fans are going to be super proud of what we put together and the types of competitors we have there. So really confident. You know, you never know what's going to happen, you know, game to game, week to week. You know, every season's a little different. But I think, you know, really excited to see these guys go out and perform. We haven't seen this team together yet. You know, we had, you know, a couple drives in the preseason, and we still didn't even have the full complement of guys. So the team will be trotting out on Sunday. Will be the first time everybody's seen them together, and I'm thrilled to watch them play.
No, we're exhilarated. This is going to be a lot of fun come Sunday. Last one, we'll let you out on this. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, though. I'm sure you've heard a lot about the age of the team. It's the oldest team in the league. I know this isn't long-term, maybe the plan, but it certainly worked last year. Dan did a great job keeping guys healthy with practice workload. But is that a concern for you at all? I believe it's the oldest team, for whatever it's worth, dating back to like 2011, 2012, by way of like years and months on average.
Yeah, I mean, not a concern, obviously. You know, and people will kind of look at that and make a big deal of it. But, you know, we have a great mix of young players and veteran players. And so, you know, our quarterback's in his second year, which is a really good thing. But then we have a Hall of Fame player at linebacker and a Hall of Fame player at defensive end and a Hall of Fame player at tight end. And those are some of the older guys on the team, but they're really still really good players. So, you know, I think those guys do a great job of not only playing really well on the field, but just passing along knowledge and leadership throughout the rest of the team. And so to have those guys, I wouldn't trade it for the world, you know, having those guys on this team, and we're proud to have those guys on this team. So I'm not worried about that. And, you know, I think it's an advantage in a lot of ways.
Adam Peters, GM of the Commanders, very gracious with his time here on Grant and Danny. By the way, I think the last time we had you on, the girls were big into Bluey. I want you to try to get them to watch Creature Cases. This is my kid's new obsession. It's really, really good. Oh. If they like animals, they're going to be all over Creature Cases.
Creature Kings? Okay. I'll because right now we got this K-pop Demon Hunter thing going on.
Oh, my God.
Run away. Stay away.
Yeah. There's nothing. Every time in the car, that's all we're listening to. So, we have outgrown Bluey, to my chagrin, because I loved watching Bluey. That's really funny. But, K-pop Demon Hunters, I there's no going back, I don't think, unfortunately.
Yeah, we let that, whatever animal that is, out of the cage.
Yeah, the toothpaste out of the tube. An entire elementary school, that song comes on, insanity. It was like the Beatles getting off the plane, man. I've never seen anything like that.
Adam, thanks.
Yeah, it's sweeping the world. But, thanks for the time, guys. It was good talking to you. I know it's been a while, so it's awesome to get back on.
So there you go, Adam Peters, the general manager of the Commanders, 3 days away from kicking off season number 2 of his tenure.
Welcome back on a Football Friday. We're the Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here on the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We're streaming live on the free Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by our friends at Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. It's Bish, Cakes, EB, and JP. Pack show, giving away some Dave Chappelle tickets this hour at 8:45. Scott Abraham's joining us at 9 o'clock from ABC7. Joe Theismann will join us momentarily, but we told you we had a big announcement, big show announcement,
yep,
coming up at 8 o'clock.
A lot of people were speculating. It's got to be their weekly guest. Last year we had Jonathan Allen before he got hurt, then B-Rob at the end of the year. This year, every Tuesday at 9:20, we're going to be joined by somebody who just joined the Washington Commanders.
Mm-hmm. He's a newbie.
And that would be Von Miller.
Yeah, look at
future
that.
Future Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Fame player.
He's like 130 career sacks. That guy?
Yeah. That guy.
Von Miller will be on weekly.
The guy's going to be terrorizing NFC East quarterbacks. That Von Miller.
He's a good talker. He's just going to be
good. Got a personality.
Got a good personality. Yeah, as you say, he's a guaranteed Hall of Famer. So we're going to get a great perspective from Von every week, every Tuesday. What is it, 9:20?
9:20. Every Tuesday.
That's his time slot. 9:20.
Perfect.
From DeSoto, Texas, DeSoto High School, mm-hmm. right outside of Dallas.
And, you know, it would be interesting to see how, you know, last year he played about, I thought it was about 200-some snaps, about a third of the snaps defensively. Mm-hmm. I would guess that it's something like that, right? Kind of just in pass rush situations. But I do think that he's going to be productive.
Well, his pass rush metrics last year were amongst the best in the game.
Right.
You mentioned it, he was playing a limited slate. But while he was in there, he was making a serious impact on the game.
Yeah.
And hopefully the same thing continues with the Washington defense this year.
Imagine, how old is he? About 35, 36?
Turned 36 in March.
Still have that freak athleticism
in you.
Still
that burst.
Yep. Wonder what it's like. I used to have a little bit of burst. I mean,
I've never had a professional burst, but just a little bit of burst. You've never had Von Miller level burst.
No, of course not. But like a little bit of burst. Now I got nothing.
Yeah, I mean, come on. We're washed. We're mid-50s.
We're all
55. We're double nickels.
Sucks. Second pick in the
draft. Nobody has burst at 55.
Yeah.
Show me somebody with quick twitch. Okay, maybe Daryl Green. Maybe him.
I don't know. Novak Djokovic at 55 might still have burst.
He's doing pretty amazing.
He's amazing.
I don't know. Let me see him in his mid-50s.
All right.
I don't think you'll see him in his mid-50s.
I know Valdez.
That's impossible.
He's trying to track down Joe T. Joe T's always great, so I'm sure.
Hold on. How old is Joker?
38, I believe.
So he's mid-50s in 17 years? Hopefully I'm still here in 17 years.
No, but my point is you're not going to see him play in his mid-50s.
He'll be doing exhibitions, but I won't care. It'll be like Tyson and Mayweather fighting. I won't care.
You call me if you see him playing.
Well, I'll do that.
All right, we did track down the great Joe Theismann, who was I was lucky enough to have him do the forward to Faith Restored. And in the forward, he talks about what it was like in the old days when he was winning Super Bowls. And he talks about all the years of people saying, what do you think is going to happen with the Skins this year? And you weren't necessarily lying, but you were overly optimistic. Now you actually have that faith restored and you believe in the team once again. Is that right, Joe?
Yes, I do, very much so. I mean, we've had so much change. And first of all, good morning, everybody.
Hello, Joe. Good morning.
Thought the season got off to an incredible start last night with a heck of a football game, and looking forward to a great one on Sunday with us against the Giants. A better one, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, you know, people would come up to me and say, what do you think? And, you know, cautious optimism was the way I always defined it.
Mm-hmm.
You get excited. They'd sort of tease us a little bit, mm-hmm. 2, 3, 4 games in, and all of a sudden, you know, something would happen. Somebody would get hurt.
Bottom
changes
would
were
fall
made.
Out. Yeah.
There were so many changes that occurred during that period of time. JP, you know, I'm excited to read the book. I think it's flattering to ask me to do the forward. I appreciate it. Gave me a chance to reflect back on a lot of memories and thoughts I had during that period of time, really through the 80s, I guess you could say. It was an incredible time for us here in the city of Washington. And you can feel the energy. It's getting closer and closer. It's building its momentum as we move towards Sunday.
Joe, I'm wondering, you know, they're making a big deal about this being the oldest team in the league, and you played on some veteran-laden teams, right? There are some legendary stories of all you vets and training camp stories, et cetera. What do you make of that? Adam Peters talked about how it could be an advantage for them.
I think it is an advantage. I really don't buy into this being, quote-unquote, the oldest team. if you add two or three older people, all of a sudden the average just jumps up. You know, Vaughn, for example, mm-hmm. your average jumps up. Mm-hmm. You look around at different positions. Bobby Wagner, your average jumps up. But I think Adam has done a terrific job, and Dan choosing the people they wanted in the positions that they needed the most help in. Our draft, you look at our draft, every position taken was one that could use depth and or the ability to be able to, you know, make plays like, you know, Jaden obviously is, goes mm-hmm. without saying. But I think that through the course of the year, you're going to see a lot of teams. You see a lot of young guys get hurt during the course of a year.
Yeah.
You know, when you're a veteran football team, when I joined this team in 74, we were the oldest team in football. We were the strongest union team in football. And, I mean, to crack into this team as a young guy was a very difficult situation. That's why I returned punts. I just wanted to be a part of something.
Huh. So that really is insane that a quarterback was returning punts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that. But I don't see it as a disadvantage at all. I think there's a great blend of youth, experience, excitement, and knowledge. That's the way I would define this football team.
Joe, how big is it that Cliff Kingsbury decided to stay around for year two as the OC instead of taking a head coaching gig elsewhere? How big is that for Jaden's development in year two here in Washington?
I think it's huge. I think that, again, when you talk about coaching changes, you also talk about system changes, coordination changes. And I think it's huge for Jaden's growth. I think it's huge for this offense. Cliff, I thought, did a masterful job. You and I, we talked a fair amount last year. And I was so impressed with the way that he called games to give Jaden a chance to be able to get comfortable, to work himself into being the quarterback that he became. There's not, the athleticism is there. The intelligence is there. There's so many wonderful things about Jaden. And the one element that I think nobody really gave a lot of credit to was Cliff's ability to be able to utilize those talents in different ways.
So Joe, talk about this game. All right. The Giants are kind of a different roster. All right. Their coaching staff is under the gun. You know, if you had to put money on it, they're probably going to be out at the end of the year unless they really turn it around. But they drafted Jackson Dart, so maybe that's the could salvage a head coaching
another
career.
Another year. Salvage yeah, another year.
Maybe another year. But, they got neighbors. He's stud. They got a really good defense. They drafted Abdul Carter, who's going to be a Micah Parsons-like type of player. I think their defense is going to be a challenge on Sunday. What do you think?
I agree with you. I do. Anybody that thinks – you know, we're what, 6.5-point favorites in
yeah,
this football game?
Right, right.
If you look at the Giants of last year, they were quite dysfunctional last year. I think we all can concede that. But they play us tough. Again, it's a division game, number one. It's in our division. The other thing is there's such a different football, and you bring it up. I think their defense is going to be very good. They have stability at the quarterback position, which they didn't have last year. And they have performance at the quarterback position, which you anticipate will be better. I think it's going to be a hard-fought football game. I think it's going to be a close football game. And the worst thing we could possibly do is take this football team lightly, saying, oh, you know, it's the Giants. We beat them a couple times last year. No, mm-hmm. You better tighten up that chin strap, because I think this is going to be a slugfest. I think this one, there's no love loss, and it's going to be a slugfest.
Joe, are you concerned about the running game? They move on from Brian Robinson, who was their most productive running back last season. You draft somebody in the seventh round. We don't know exactly how he's going to fit in. We expect Chris Rodriguez maybe to get the bulk of the carries. What do you think about the Commanders' running game?
I think it's going to be complementary to our passing game. You know, you added Debo on one side. So you look at the additions, Larry on the left tackle position. You added offensive line. You added wide receiver. Running back situation, you know, we've got guys that have been there. Again, it isn't just Jaden that benefits from being familiar with the system and having Cliff here. It's the whole offense that way. The guys that have been there can help the young guys learn. Getting Terry signed, I think, was so important. I mean, you know, Terry had 13 touchdowns last year as a wide receiver, 1,000 mm-hmm. yards again, 82 catches. I mean, his performance is unbelievable. Now you add Debo to that mix, and I think it complements the running game. They work with together. It's like, you know, you look at the Miami Dolphins with Tariq Hill, okay? He changes the dynamics of what you can do in the secondary when it comes to run support, because he can go over the top. Mm-hmm. Well, Terry can go over the top. We have people who can get down. Finola can get over the top. So I think our passing game is really going to complement the offense when it comes to running the football.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because Jaden was so remarkable last year, and I don't see any reason why he's not going to grow from it. But tell us what kind of evolution you're guessing we might see from Jaden from year one to year two.
I think a comfort level with the offense a little bit. I think you're going to see him get the ball out of his hands a little bit easier, a little bit quicker than he did last year. Last year, he relied so much on his athletic ability to escape and make plays. I still think we're going to go for it on fourth down because they trust him implicitly with the ball.
Right.
I still believe that.
You think he'll rush for as much? Process.
Pardon?
Do you think he'll rush for as much?
It depends on what happens up front. I mean, if the offensive line does their job, no. I think he's going to be called upon in different instances to be able to utilize his legs. But I saw last year where he made a lot of moves, made a lot of plays, and I think that's one thing he'll learn about, having studied himself. That's really what you do, is you sit down and study yourself. You know, you talk about a growth. Tom Brady's a good friend, great friend. I asked Tom about the growth at the position. You know, as Tom, you've done so much. You won championships. You know, he said every day you have to learn. Every day you're learning something. You're learning something about a teammate. You're learning something about the offense. You're learning something about yourself. And I see Jaden being that kind of a student of this game. I was thinking about him last night because I knew we were going to have a conversation. He has football intelligence as well as academic intelligence. He's a smart young man, but he has football smarts. He's learned to protect himself. He's learned to get out of bounds. He's learned to be able to line up for the next play. You don't do anybody any good if you're, you know, basically on a table in the in the training room trying to heal. So he's learning all those things, which is part of his growth.
We're joined by Joe Theismann on the Rude Guest Hotline. Joe, do you have any worries about the wideout room outside of Terry and Debo as far as the depth? Because Noah Brown was barely on the field during training camp. Luke McCaffrey underwhelmed as a rookie, and the reports on him out of camp weren't great. They add Jalen Lane in the draft. Do you have any worries about that room? It seems a little top-heavy.
Well, I think if you look at a lot of rooms, they're top-heavy. I mean, once you go through 1, 2, 3, they're basically the starters. Then you have position players, basically, that are guys that come in specific situations. So they're basically situational players. You know, Luke is the kind of guy who can, you know, operate in the slot, basically. He's not going to be an outside guy. You know, and Debo's in there. So if something happens, you've got somebody that's familiar with the system to be able to step in. I think the depth is good enough that if something happens to the, you know, the starters, you have somebody in there who can make plays. Then you can't forget Ertz. You know, you can't ignore the tight end position, which was a big position for us last year.
Hey, Joe, I'm going to guess the answer to this is no. Did you ever have an opposing player spit on you before the game started, like Jalen Carter did last night to Dak Prescott?
I turned the game on. I'm sitting and watching it, and I looked at this, and I thought, I've never, ever seen anybody insult his teammates like he did last night. Because it's an insult to the guys that busted their rear ends. His teammates worked their rear ends off for this football game. They pointed to this football game. It's the opening game. And you get yourself thrown out before a snap ever happens.
Right.
I mean, to me, he should stand up in front of every one of those players. There should be a meeting this morning. And he should stand up in front of everybody. Whether they won or lost didn't matter. They wound up winning. But he should stand up and say, guys, look, I am so sorry that I let you down, that I disappointed you. All our hard work for this moment, and I basically tried to ruin it, and I apologize. That's what I would expect from this young man.
Joe, you know, in the book that I wrote, Faith Restored, one of the things that I hit on is kind of how it's night and day from the previous regime to this regime. They're going to have a Santana Moss ceremony at halftime. Art Monk is going to be honored. And when they did Darryl Green ceremony at halftime, it was a home run. It was like handled perfectly. And I know you were friendly with the previous owner, but you see the difference too. What has impressed you about what Josh Harris and this ownership group has done? Obviously, Jaden drives the product on the field, but off the field, this connection with the fans and everything is totally different. What has impressed you about the new regime?
I think there are people in place with Josh and his group that they understand football. They understand winning, you know, starting with Adam. I mean, they really understand what they want to do with football team. They know what they want. I mean, they've remodeled the practice facility, the practice, the locker rooms and everything. It's the place is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you walk through that place and you look at it and you go, if I'm a guy coming from another team, if I'm considered a free agent to come in, you walk around through that facility and you go, wow, man, these people care. They care about the players. They care about what's going on. They're doing an unbelievable job to support what we want to do. And again, I think from a personnel standpoint, you had great quality personnel in every aspect, in the front office, on the field. And, you know, I just think the direction that they're moving in is a very positive one. And of course, winning as many games as you do in your first year, second year, really, you know, it gets everybody excited. You know, for a long time, and that's, you know, with your book, you know, Faith Restored. It really is. I mean, last year just ignited everything. Now, don't go overly crazy about this football team until they get on the field. I mean, last year was terrific. We're excited about what they accomplished. But it's a different story this year. You're not playing a bunch of 1 o'clock games. You're playing on Thursday. You're playing on Sunday. Yeah. You're playing late. You're playing overseas. These are all adjustments. And this is where the first question you asked about an older team, this is where an older team has an advantage because they're used to the changes. Young teams, it's a little disorienting for them. But the older teams, you basically get a feel for what you need to do. The veterans can sort of bring the young guys along and say, man, get your rest. You know, stay hydrated. You're going to be on an airplane for a while. You're going to have time off. How do you handle your time off? This is where the veterans on this football team can make a tremendous impact on the ball club.
You know, Joe, you were part of broadcasting for years doing primetime games. Could you have imagined how much it's grown where you've got Thursday night football, you got Friday night, you've got all these different streaming services, yeah. You got games in Brazil.
You don't know
the Commanders are playing in Madrid. It's ridiculous.
I'm going to be in Madrid for that one. Wow. No, it's crazy. I mean, it just shows you the growth and dominance and the foresight of the National Football League. They want to dominate the airways. I mean, that's you don't see college football going up against the NFL. They just won't do it. They really can't do it because they'd lose out, I believe, in the long run. You're going to have the fans that'll watch that particular college team, but that's the way it's. Unless it's Notre Dame, everybody will watch that. But sort of had to sprinkle that in. But no, it's been different. When we first started doing Sunday night football, it was like, wow, we took a great leap, and then we started doing some Thursdays. You know, I was there really. When ESPN got the contract to do, you know, NFL football, mm-hmm. I did 8 in the studio and 8 on the road. We only had half a season. And now it's dominates the world as far as the NFL goes. And people would say, well, you know, it's a saturation of the market. There's so much football. People have been starved. I walk around the city and everybody comes up and says, I go down to the restaurant. My restaurant called Joe Theismann's, by the way. I'm sitting there and people say, oh, thank goodness it's here. It's finally here. This has been the toughest 6 weeks of my life. I'm so excited about it. And, you know, it's the game of games is what it really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joe's a fan, like for the book, I talked to him about it. And you can take us through this real quick. Last one. Take us through the last couple minutes of that Hail Mary game. Because you told me you never completed a Hail Mary pass.
No, I don't even think I tried to remember when we were talking about it. I tried to remember if I ever tried one. We were so efficient as an offense. I mean, it was unbelievable. And coach had us always ready, but I'm sitting there watching it and like everybody else thinking, oh geez, the Bears are going to win. Oh gosh. You know, we were on a roll and could this be the beginning of something like we've seen so many times before turning the wrong way. And then, you know, the ball goes up in the air, and I'm going, oh, okay, here's a Hail Mary. I've seen different guys throw Hail Marys, and all of a sudden, the ball is caught. And that's what I'm talking about. I mean, that's it, right? That, to me, I think was a catalyst for this football team to know that, you know, you talk about believe. We can get it done. We believe. We can do it. But then all of a sudden, you know, there's that divine intervention that I look at and say, okay, it isn't just us. You know, those kind of things are pure luck. You know, you don't sit down and design it like you do a route being run down around the goal line and put the move on the defensive back and you hit him with a quick post. It's not drawn up that way. It's throw it in the air and hope. That's why they call it a Hail Mary. You know, my dear friend Drew Pearson and Roger Staubach were the ones that created that against Minnesota. So, you know, to me, it was just an exhilarating moment for me to be able to see that happen. And like I said, I think that jump started us going forward.
And you said you scared your wife because you screamed and jumped out of your chair.
Scared Robin half to death. I jumped out of my chair. I screamed. She looked at me like I was nuts, which she looks at me a lot like I'm nuts.
Joe, always love talking to you. Good appreciate stuff, it. Joe. It's honored you did the forward for the book. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Talk to you guys later.
Yep. All right. Thanks, man. That's a great Joe Theismann. We got Scott Abraham joining us at 9 o'clock on a Football Friday. But next, we'll sprinkle a little entertainment. Do EB's entertainment page next here on the Junkies.